Well, hopefully he's got a clearer picture than he did last night on what this Cyclone Omer is going to do. Now, if it confused Gavin Morris, then it could confuse anyone. And he joins us now. Gav, has she straightened up a bit?
Look, mate, it worked out exactly how I said it would play out last night, mate. It just confused everyone. And I think the current track log is probably the most accurate track log that we've had so far. At the moment, the forecast is for Omer to just go around in a circle.
Righto.
Yeah, so at the moment, look, I'll explain why the models are having so much difficulty in trying to forecast Omer's move. It comes down to the layers of the atmosphere. They're not uniformed. They're not traveling all in the same direction at the same time. So when the layers are moving at different speeds or in different directions, it causes cyclones to wobble. It kind of shears them apart, so they can't reach full intensity. So that explains why Omer is only sitting at Category 1, Category 2, and we'll probably go back to Category 2 because of those steering winds. And because of the steering winds, they're not all moving in the same direction at the same time. There's a layer that will dominate for a while, and then another will dominate, and that's why Omer is constantly changing directions. And the supercomputers are having so much difficulty in trying to forecast Omer's movement. So I've called her the unpredictable one, and I'm going to stick with that. I still think the next 24-hour period is going to be somewhat unpredictable. I think Omer will probably just sit out there, linger, and hover around that Category 1, Category 2 status for reasons that I just explained,
yep,
and just hang out there again because of the steering winds, that they're just not uniform. But then I'm probably leaning towards Omer drifting to the north, as the Australian supercomputer suggested yesterday afternoon, and potentially deteriorate. But as I said at the beginning of it, Omer remains an unpredictable system, and that's why residents of southeast Queensland and northeastern New South Wales still have to pay attention, be vigilant and alert to its movements, because I've actually seen this happen before. We think it's going to do that, and then overnight, all of a sudden, you know, it starts making a move and can start to move towards the coast really quite quickly. So there's still, it's a smaller percentage chance of that occurring, but it still exists. And that's why residents of the northern rivers and the Gold Coast, Queen Coast, Byron Coast have to be vigilant with this storm there, Steve.
So if she does what you're expecting, Gav, she won't make landfall at all?
Yeah, that's probably the highest percentage expectation of Omer at this point. Most of the supercomputers are now, becoming aligned with that forecast.
Yep.
So as I said last night, once we get a better, unification of the supercomputers, when they all start thinking along the same lines, that's when the picture becomes clearer. And I think we're just about at that point. I think over the next 12, 24-hour period, we're going to start to really see a clearer picture on her movements, which is probably going to lean toward that way. So I think that forecast that the American GFS supercomputer had, that it'll track along the New South Wales coast and potentially reach Newcastle, which was really quite far-fetched, I don't think that one is going to occur. I don't think it's going to pump all the way inland, sadly, and deliver drought-breaking rain. That was a nice little forecast track, and you'd kind of hope for that one. But obviously the coast would be battered, severely under those circumstances. But most likely it'll probably pan out this way. But still hang there for some weekend, Steve. And that means really, really big swell, strong rips and currents, very strong southeasterly winds for pretty much the entire coast, shading and clouding the coast east of the Great Dividing Range and producing consistent squally showers, some of which have been heavy. Laurieton up to Mount Seaview, there was 30 to over 100 millimetres. The Coffs Coast up to the Dorrigo Plateau received some really big numbers, and there were some decent numbers around the Brunswick and Richmond valleys as well.
Well, so I guess in that's pretty good news really then, isn't it?
Yeah, look, no matter what, everyone has been, affected by the drought. And there's obviously a lot of farming communities. You've got the sugarcane country there, just south of the Queensland border, and a lot of cattle farmers, dairy farmers as well, that sit in the valleys and, the foothills of the eastern slopes. So they'll be benefiting. They'll enjoy this. The ground needs nitrogen badly. Look, most people that are experiencing extremely dry conditions, it doesn't matter how often you hose your yard, your grass, it just doesn't go green. It needs nitrogen. And rain is nitrogen rich. And that's why you just get a little bit of rain and then, bam, the grass goes so green, so very, very fast in comparison. You can hose it, fill a cow, come home, but it will not turn green for you.
Gav, nobody explains it as you do. Nobody actually puts it into plain English like the rest of us can understand the way you do, mate, and I always appreciate it appreciate you for it.
Oh, mate, not a problem. Sadly, though, that air mass, yeah, on the eastern side, it's nice and moist. The cloud is thicker, and that's where we're getting showers. But on the western side, that air mass is drying out, and it's breaking up. And that's why we're only seeing cumulus clouds form over the western slopes. And the dry inland areas of the northern, central, southern plains of New South Wales, I'm afraid, will remain dry, just a little bit cooler.
Yeah, if only. Gav, always good to talk to you, mate. Thanks for that.
Have a great weekend, Steve.
That's Gavin Morris from the NBN Newsroom.